brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are going to hit on some of the last little bits of NBA free agency. And maybe we'll even talk, I know we mentioned earlier that we might talk the top five NBA coaches of all time as well. So, Jay, why don't you kick us off with the end of free agency? Give us a couple of things that we want to react to and maybe as we look ahead here to the season.
All right, so the first thing, the big ticket items, we're going back to end of July because that's kind of when we talked about this last, was C.J. McCollum and Draymond Green both got huge contract extensions. C.J. McCollum, 3 years, $100 million. Draymond Green, 4 years, $100 million. Obviously, in my opinion, great deals for both of them. Congratulations. We didn't know what Draymond was going to do, but I think once Durant left, it was kind of sealed that he was staying, would be my guess.
Yeah, it seemed like it makes sense for Draymond to stay and be a part of what Golden State's going to try to build going forward. I think it's probably a better deal for Draymond maybe than for the Warriors, depending on which Draymond you get. If you get regular season of the last year or two Draymond, where he was kind of out of shape and didn't play the way he was capable of, versus the guy that we saw in this playoff run in the spring of 2019, if you're getting that guy for the next 4 years, then it's probably a bargain. But I'm not sure that that's the guy that you're going to get for all four of those years. They're going to need him to be that guy this year.
This year. This is a four-year extension, so this is on top of this upcoming season, correct? So
I believe that's
so,
right.
I think you're right. I think if they get the guy who showed up in the playoffs, that would be huge, and they're going to need him this season, like big time. Like he's going to need to be that guy.
Yeah, he's going to need to be very, very good in order for them to be able to be what they could potentially be. He's going to have to score, I think, a little bit this year, because without Durant and without Klay, they're going to need some scoring out of him a little bit more. Like, you go back to, I think, their first run, and he was a double-figure scorer. Maybe he was at 11, 12 points a game.
Last year
in the regular season, I think he only averaged like 7
did
points
he
a average, game.
He averaged just – he was had to be fourth still on scoring, though, in that first run, right? Harrison Barnes had to average more points than he did in the game.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, he was definitely a double-figure scorer at that point, and it felt like he was – a more integral part of their offense, whereas in this last few iterations with Durant, it seems like his offense was just a complete afterthought. He's going to have to be able to make some shots this year in order for Golden State to reach their potential. If he doesn't have any offensive game, it's going to be really, really tough on Steph and D'Angelo Russell to produce the kind of offense that they're going to need in order to be able to stay in the Western Conference playoff picture, which I think they'll be able to do, but they're definitely going to be on the back end of the Western Conference playoff picture. I think their days, at least at the top of the, you know, in the top four seeds without Klay, I think it's going to be tough to get there unless Steph has just a monster James Harden type regular season where he's putting up 35, 36
That's
a game.
That's blasphemy. You just put Steph and James Harden in the same sentence.
Well, I'm just talking statistically. I'm not talking about coming through in big moments, obviously.
All right, so then the C.J. McCollum, I think, you know, a lot of people have always said that there's no way that they can keep the two of them together, like contractually. Well, obviously, Portland found a way to do it. And, I mean, obviously, Portland's kind of going all in here with all the moves that I guess they made, and they're like, okay, well, I guess we're sticking with Dame and CJ. Obviously, you know, who knows what could happen in 2 years from now when there's still another year, 2 years left on his contract, but I think Portland's pretty showing us that they're going to stick with him.
I like that contract under any circumstances, but I really like it under the fact that the Golden State monster has been erased. And now you look at, well, what are the teams that were right below Golden State last year that had an opportunity to compete? And certainly Portland was one of them. And if you look at that final series last year against Denver in the Western Conference Finals, McCollum was their best player. Lillard, I don't know if he was out of gas or just didn't have a good series, but McCollum was better than him in that particular series. And so you mentioned the argument has always been, are those two guys good enough defensively? Do they have enough size to be able to compete at the highest level? And I think that's always going to be a question mark until they get there. But the reality is, we all know in the NBA that it's driven by the very, very best players. And so how many guys can really take their team to a championship? There are, you know, you can count them, let's say on one hand, and probably even less than one hand. And so if you're Portland doubling down on the McCollum-Lillard backcourt, especially in this upcoming season where there's not going to be a clear title favorite, if they can get anything out of Hassan Whiteside and have him come back to, you know, a level that he reached.
He's one of your favorite players, right?
I mean, Whiteside, he has a tantalizing skill set, but he has not been the most positive team guy or brought the best attitude and work ethic to his ball club. So I'm not sure that that's going to change, but who knows? Right now, I guess if I'm Portland, I'm looking at him as half-season insurance against Nurkic coming back and against the development of Zach Collins. So who knows? I like bringing back McCollum because I think Portland is positioned just as well as any of these other contenders in the West, where you can throw them all in a hat and kind of mix it up, and you can make an easy argument for a bunch of teams coming out of the West this year, whereas obviously for the last 4 or 5 years, it's been a done deal. When we were sitting here the last 3 or 4 years in late August, it was clear what was going to happen. We all knew who the Western Conference final representative was going to be. And this year, you can make a case for a bunch of teams, and Portland is certainly one of them that's put themselves into position to be able to make a claim for the Western Conference.
Yeah. All right. So the next thing was more of a surprise than anything, that this guy is still in the league. Udonis Haslem is coming back for his 17th NBA season.
So when you told me that, I seriously, the first thing that went through my head is, I think Udonis Haslem is like, I asked you, is he like 47 years old? But I think he's only, what you said, it was his 16th year, so he's probably...
Last year was his 16th year, so
okay, he's around 38, probably somewhere in there, which is fairly old for an NBA player.
He averaged like 1 point and something, 1 point and...
He's a good clubhouse.
He must be a good clubhouse guy.
Good clubhouse guy.
Is he a member discount or what?
that was always his reputation going back to even the time when he was playing with the championship teams with the Heat. So,
well, they need to keep him to keep Jimmy Butler in line.
That's right. You got to have somebody in the locker room to be able to talk Butler down off the ledge. So,
all right. And then the one that happened recently, Caris LeVert, 3 years, $52 million for Brooklyn. I think this is a good move on Brooklyn's end, but also I think it's a good move for Caris LeVert because he's been injury prone. He was injured in college a lot. He was injured in the pros, obviously, last year. It gives him some security for the future, but also gives Brooklyn some, I think it gives Brooklyn some flexibility, because if it doesn't work, they're going to have 2 years of, they'll be able to, he'll have a contract that they can probably trade, because it's a good one.
It definitely is. And you look at the beginning of the year last year before he broke his foot, and he was probably their best player. And, you know, it was trending towards that team becoming Caris LeVert's team. And then obviously in his absence, D'Angelo kind of took off and it became more of his team. And then that obviously ended up with him signing and getting traded to Golden State. So I think it was a good move for both the Nets and for Caris LeVert, like you said, because it seems like they were able to reach a fair equilibrium price where LeVert gets a little long-term security based on his injury history, and the Nets lock up a player who, if he plays to what his capabilities are and he plays to the way that he played in the first 20 games of last season, it's probably a bargain contract. So both teams are taking a little bit of a risk and kind of meeting in the middle, and I think that ultimately is going to end up being a good deal for both parties. Hopefully, neither one of them ends up regretting the deal, either the Nets because LeVert gets injured or LeVert because he way outperforms his contract, although that would obviously be the better outcome for both parties rather than him getting hurt. So good move for the Nets. The Nets are going to be an interesting team. We know all the changes that they underwent, and they've got a good young core, and they added Kyrie, so it'll be interesting to see how that chemistry works, and Kenny Atkinson's a good coach, so I think they have a good system there. So it'll be interesting to see how they're able to fit Kyrie into it this year, especially with Durant not being looming over that, you know, looming over that situation. He'll obviously be around, but he's not going to be on the floor, on the practice gym. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Brooklyn Nets.
All right, and then the albatross in the room, Dwight Howard, waived by Memphis and signing with the Los Angeles Lakers. Before I tell you the contract details, I want you to tell me what do you think about the fit before I tell you the contract details.
Okay, I mean, to be honest, I'm not really that worried about the contract. The Buss family, I'm sure, whatever it is, whatever it may be, I'm sure can afford it. Dwight is in a position where he's basically burned down the town on his way out of the last 4, 5, 6 places where people just can't wait to get rid of him. So whatever the contract terms are or aren't, I think is irrelevant. So the question becomes, can Dwight Howard be any type of a factor in a positive way in impacting the Lakers winning games. And part of me wants to say yes. Part of you looks at his physical tools, the things that he's done in the past, and there were years back in the late 2008, 2009, 2010 where he was playing at an MVP type level, and you still see that type of athleticism, and part of you says, man, if that guy can just put it together, and he's got two guys who are clearly better than him on this team that maybe can lead him in the right direction and help him to understand. I agree. I know you're laughing over there, and I'm probably laughing too, but that's the case for Dwight Howard, is that at one time he was a tremendous talent, a tremendous player, and was a guy who produced and took his team to the finals one year as clearly the best player on that team. So there's talent in there. The question just becomes, it seems like everywhere he's been, he's worn out his welcome very, very, very fast. And it would be very, very surprising for him to change and go against that track record and have this work out. But yet, I'm sure...
But if he gets a part in Space Jam 2...
That might work out for him. I just think he's such a tantalizing athletic specimen. And because of his history in the league and because of what he's done in the past, it's easy to get seduced into thinking that Dwight Howard is going to have a positive impact on the Lakers. And the reality is he's going to get every opportunity to play, especially with Boogie going down again. I mean, how many minutes can you play JaVale McGee? And yeah, they can play without a center, and Davis can play a lot of center, which is probably what's going to happen. But Davis doesn't want to play 82 games getting beat up at the center position. So if Howard can eat up minutes and play at some percentage of his former self and not be a cancer on the floor and in the locker room, who knows? Okay. Am I betting on that? I'd say it's about I give it about a 3% chance of working out positively.
So,
and a 97%
chance. So let me read you the tweet of Bobby Marks, and I want you to tell me what stands out the most. This is Bobby Marks.
Okay,
on Twitter,
I'm ready.
Tweeting the contract details. The contract that Dwight Howard will sign in Los Angeles is called a summer contract because it has zero salary protection, comparable to the Anthony Bennett contract in Houston. Howard will earn $14,490 per day he is on the roster. The per-day clock will start October 21st. So I believe that's opening night.
Hey, I wouldn't mind getting that on a per-day contract. Maybe they'll sign me.
Well, I think
I'd be a good clubhouse guy.
The thing that stood out to me was the fact that Anthony Bennett was in the tweet.
But compared that, no, but okay, that's a good tweet. But the Woj tweet was the best one. You know what I'm talking about?
I probably do, but I don't remember.
So the Woj tweet was, it went through, I forget what the lead into it was, but basically it talked about Dwight's poor behavior and all the things that he had done at these favors, his other stops, and Woj said, Dwight has been warned. That he better have it together, or basically the intimation was that he was going to be out the door. So not surprising. It's amazing to me that a guy who has had that good of a career, and we have talked about it a couple of times, I think, on the podcast, of whether or not we think he's a Hall of Famer. And if you look at his statistical case and the number of all NBAs he's had and the number of all-star teams he made, I think it's almost inevitable that he's going to be an NBA Hall of Fame. You know, he's going to be a basketball Hall of Famer. And yet, you now have, what, four, five, six teams that literally, they celebrate when the guy leaves. And it's amazing that a guy can be that toxic in whatever way it is that he's toxic, whether it's that he doesn't take things seriously, whether he's just, you know.
Is the only team that's A-hole, not celebrating, know. I mean, the only team that didn't celebrate him leaving was Orlando because he left on his own accord. Because they didn't trade him, right?
No, Orlando, right. He left as a free agent. I mean, Orlando at that point wanted him to stay before he went to Los Angeles the first time. They wanted him to stay and come back. And rightly so. I mean, again, at that point, he was still not that far away.
You just remember another tweet that was really good was right when they announced the signing. Freezing Cold Takes on Twitter tweeted a picture of him, the Steve Nash and him, that said, this is going to be fun.
This is going to be fun, yeah. Well, hopefully Sports Illustrated won't put that cover out again, because that was obviously not very fun.
All right, so we'll talk, I guess we'll move really quickly. Do you want to talk about the Team USA?
I mean, they lost.
Did you watch the Australia game at all?
I did not watch the game.
So I DVR'd it because I knew I wasn't getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I watched it. I want you to know, Patty Mills... What a game that guy had.
13 in the fourth quarter, right?
13 in the fourth quarter. He ended with 30 in the game. You know, sadly, Delly didn't really play much of a role. I wish they would have played him more, but I guess they didn't need him for that game. But, I think I think Team USA is gonna it's gonna be very competitive this time around because they don't have any superstars, and I think, I mean, if I'm them, I'm afraid of Greece just because Giannis is playing. I'm afraid of Serbia because of your friend Jokic, but they've got Jokic, they've got Bogdanovic, and they've got Boban. And who on the Team USA, I mean, Boban is a giant. I mean, Boban's not great. Okay, I want to be clear here. But there's no one on this team that would be able to guard him. There's no one. I mean, Brook Lopez? And I know the game's not really for post-up players, but I just don't know if they put two of those guys on the floor at the same time, how Team USA is going to handle them. So I think it'll be interesting. I still think that they're going to be competitive and they've got a shot to win it all, but I think at the same time, I think they're going to actually have to face some adversity throughout the whole process.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's going to be tough. And yet, they're the only team in the field that can field all NBA players. Their entire roster is made up of NBA players, and no other team in the field can say that. Yet, there's going to be two games when they play against Greece and when they play against Serbia when Jokic is on the floor and when Giannis is on the floor, where they may not have the best player on the floor, which is pretty rare.
They might not have the best player. When they play Greece, they definitely don't have the best player.
Well, okay. Yeah, it goes without saying. So that's a rarity for a Team USA in an international competition, at least in the last year since the Dream Team. So I expect them to struggle here and there. I expect them to still be right there competing for the gold medal. If they don't win it, I won't be stunned. But if they do win it, I won't be stunned either. It's just, I think it's an opportunity for some of those younger guys to cut their teeth on international play. And next year, I think the more interesting piece moving forward is what is that team that's headed to Tokyo next year? What does that team look like that's going to go to Japan for the Olympics next year?
And here's my other piece that I'll say. I think this will be a very interesting experiment to see what happens with Boston this year. Four guys on Team USA getting all this time together, playing together. I mean, you think about it. Kemba's learning how to play with these guys on this Team USA.
Oh, it's a huge advantage.
It's a huge advantage for them for this upcoming season because, and by the way, they also have, and we'll get to this discussion in a minute, probably one of the greatest coaches in NBA history coaching them. So the fact that they get to learn from Popovich, who's not their head coach, and that's understandable, but at the same time, they're learning from him on this trip, and they're learning from all the other guys that are out there. And there's a lot of people, including Showalter's out there here and there. I've seen him kind of popping up in pictures. At least he was in Vegas and whatnot. But just learning from all these guys, and it's just, I think it's going to be huge for the four Boston Celtics guys to have all this time together.
Yeah, it's a huge bonding experience. Just the fact that they can spend more time getting to know each other, especially because Kemba hasn't played with any of the other three, and they came out of a toxic environment last year with Kyrie and just how fast everything went south. And to be able to kind of have a reset here with Team USA with four key guys that are part of that team, I think it's going to be a big advantage. It all comes down to how those guys develop and what they end up becoming in this NBA season. How good is Tatum going to be? How good is Jaylen Brown going to be? I think Marcus Smart, we know what he is. I don't know that he's going to develop into more than what he currently is. But it's a huge advantage for them. There's no question about that. And it'll be interesting to see how that impacts their season once they get to training camp, because they really have had an extended training camp that other teams don't have that same ability to be able to put their players together in the same way in that kind of environment, as you said, under great coaching.
Yeah. All right. So we'll talk very briefly. Five greatest NBA coaches.
Let's do it this way. I think there's four.
I have four as well.
I think there are four that are no-brainers, and I'm sure we have the same four. So we'll trade back and forth and just briefly talk about what qualifies each of those four to make it onto our top five coaching list. And then together we'll try to come up with who our fifth guy is, because I'm guessing our top four are going to be identical. We did. Now wait. Now you're not going to come up with and give me like a cheerleading coach or a guy who's been the best NBA assistant or anything.
NBA coach.
Okay, NBA coaches only. All right. Yeah. So, are we going to go in a particular order? Or are we just naming?
I think we just name names. Because I think it's hard to split.
All right.
at least for now, and then we can say at the end who we think the best is.
All right, that sounds fair. Go ahead. I'll give you the first.
Okay, well, I'm going with Popovich. Okay. I think there's no doubt that Greg Popovich is one of the top five NBA coaches, okay? And here's why. They haven't missed the playoffs since, I think, 97, okay? And he's been the coach the whole time. And if you look at the NBA and you look at the landscape and how everything has changed and how player movement and teams are bound to go up and down at any given point, they've never done it. They've been in the playoffs. And he's had talentless rosters at times and still made the playoffs. Like, let's be honest. The roster this year, LaMarcus Aldridge, great. His second player got hurt, tore his ACL. I probably could sit here and come up with some more names of people that were on the team this year. They still made the playoffs, and they were competitive in the playoffs. So I can't not have Greg Popovich in the greatest coaches of all time.
That kind of consistency is just ridiculous. It doesn't happen in any sport that somebody goes that long. I guess the New England Patriots would argue with me. But for the most part,
still missed the playoffs when Brady tore his ACL. Correct. And everything. So.
I mean, things like that happen.
Yeah.
You know, things like that happen. I mean, obviously they had the good fortune of having David Robinson and then having him get hurt one year and being able to bring in Duncan as the number one pick, who then plays for 19 seasons at a very, very high all-time NBA level. And so, yeah, Popovich clearly in the modern era deserves to be in that list.
And he hired himself, too.
Good hire.
Yeah.
Next, Red Auerbach.
Yep, I had him on my list.
Clearly, Red has to be on there. If you go back to the early history of the league, there was nobody who was more influential in just from an X's and O's standpoint, but also from an integrating the league standpoint. Brought the first black players, was the first, you know, the Celtics fielded more African-American players than any other franchise, much earlier than other teams started to integrate. And so for that, he was a pioneer, and the winning and the record speaks for itself. And there's probably no more iconic symbol other than maybe the logo Jerry West than the Red Auerbach victory cigar, which you think about it in today's society. And I always laugh when I look at those pictures of the old Boston Garden, and you'll see like the smoke hanging in the air of all the people that were smoking in the arena. It's amazing that
now it's just marijuana smoke at it's amazing concerts.
That, it's amazing that they were allowed to do that. Yep. And that Red's victory cigar, though, became a symbol of Celtics dominance. So certainly Red deserves to be on there for numerous reasons.
All right. Phil Jackson has to be on the list. And some people will try to diminish the fact that, oh, yeah, it's very easy to win when you have Michael Jordan. And then after you leave Chicago, you go and coach in L.A. and you have Kobe and Shaq. I think it'd be hard. We're not talking about in leadership positions.
We're not talking about New York Knicks GM, Phil Jackson. No,
we're only talking about coaching. And just the whole, the offensive schemes that he would draw up and things that he would do. And, you know, even, you know, we could look to the 2 years that Michael didn't play and they were still competitive. So, I mean, I think you have to say that he is one of the greatest of all time.
Nobody would argue the fact that it's easier to win when you have great players. You talk to any coach and they will readily admit / believe that when you have better players, it makes you a better coach. So there's no question about that. But any guy you put on a list of all-time greatest coaches is going to have coached great players. So just look at the two guys we've already mentioned, Auerbach and Bill Russell and John Havlicek and Bob Cousy and Sam Jones and Casey Jones and Don Nelson. And the list goes on and on and on. And Popovich with Duncan and Robinson and Ginobili and Parker and just all the guys that have gone through there. So, yes, Phil Jackson had an opportunity to coach the greatest player of all time. He had a chance to coach two other guys who we had either in our top 10 or close to our top 10. And that's not as easy as it sounds, especially you look at the outsized personalities and egos of those three guys, Jordan, Shaq, Kobe. Throw Scottie Pippen in there, throw in the fact that he won the second three-peat with Dennis Rodman on the team. Managing those personalities and being able to kind of do things in a different way, he definitely approached the game differently than coaches prior to him had approached it. So I think there's no doubt that Phil Jackson has to be on the list of all-time greatest coaches. Fourth one. Pat Riley.
I have him as well. Well, right. we were in agreement. Look at that.
So you look at what Riley did with the Showtime Lakers, played one style, fast break, up and down the floor, offensive basketball led by Magic and Kareem and Worthy and Byron Scott and the whole group. And then he goes to the Knicks and he inherits the John Starks, Anthony Mason, Charles Oakley, Patrick Ewing Knicks, and he completely transforms that into a defensive juggernaut, which he continued when he went on to
Miami.
The Miami Heat with Mourning and that whole crew. And just the fact that he was able to take such different groups of talent and take them to the highest level and excel, and then what he's done as an executive, although I know it doesn't impact what he was as a coach.
Yeah.
But certainly it adds to his resume that Pat Riley deserves to be on that pantheon of great NBA coaches.
I think you said it all for him, so I don't really have anything to add. I'm not a really huge fan of Pat Riley, but I can't deny him the top four. I had him on the list. So.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what he did with the Knicks and Heat, and he certainly didn't play a beautiful style of basketball, but then you go back and you watch the Showtime Lakers, and maybe you say, hey, the guy just did with what he had and played under the rules of that era.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that you can doubt the fact that Riley's impact as a coach in the league definitely deserves to have him be on the Mount Rushmore of all-time NBA coaches.
All right, the fifth one. This was the hard one for me.
I mean, there's a lot of people that you could probably make a good argument for.
I had it narrowed down to two.
Okay, I'll say okay. Give me your two, and then I'll see if either of these two came to me as
for 32 years coaching in the NBA, Lenny Wilkins. He's one.
So Lenny, is he still? I don't know if he's
no,
still.
No, Don Nelson passed him. He's got three more wins than Lenny Wilkins.
All right.
Now, so, and he had 11 losing seasons. So I did some, he did 11 losing seasons, but if you look at some of the talent on some of those rosters, but anyway, so Lenny Wilkins was one.
Longevity for Lenny, and I think Lenny was a well-respected coach.
And he had a good fashion sense.
throughout the entire league, and I'm partial to Lenny because he was here in Cleveland during a time we had the Price, Doherty, Nance, Harper, Hot Rod, Cavs teams here. And so I'm definitely partial to Lenny Wilkins. And certainly his sheer longevity and number of wins that he was able to put up qualifies him to be part of this discussion for sure. Who's your other guy?
The other guy I had was Larry Brown. I really don't like him. So I'm leaning towards Lenny Wilkins, but Larry Brown, I had him.
Larry Brown, I think his legacy is mixed because of the amount of time that he spent jumping from job to job, and he obviously was in the NBA, and he was in college basketball for a long time. I think he has the reputation as being a great tactician and a great teacher of the game. I think Larry Brown, at least towards the end of his career, as the game was starting to change around him, I think he was a little prickly and maybe didn't get along.
Is he still coaching in college somewhere?
He was at SMU, but I don't think he's still at SMU, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, so those were the two that I had narrowed down to, and my other Don Nelson would have been my honorable mention because he has the all-time wins.
Yeah, Don Nelson is the other guy I would throw out there. To be honest, I didn't realize that Don Nelson had the most wins, but I look at the way that Don Nelson's teams played. And the interesting thing is Don Nelson never won an NBA championship. Did Lenny win an NBA championship in
one.
Seattle?
One.
He won the Seattle. He won in Seattle. I believe he was the
I just remember coach. One. I don't know which. I can't tell you.
I think he was the coach of the whatever year in the 70s, 78, 79, or 77, 78 Sonics team. I believe he was the coach of that team. But at any rate,
Larry Brown was coaching in Italy last year.
Okay, so he wasn't at SMU anymore. No. I didn't think so.
2016 he ended in SMU.
I didn't think he had been there. But Don Nelson, not only for his longevity and the number of wins, but just the fact that he played such a different style of basketball. And he was playing small ball 20 years before small ball came into play. And you think about what he did with Nash and Nowitzki when they were in Dallas and what he did with Run TMC and Golden State, and just the fact that he was a very, very innovative guy and came up with lots of different things and just different ways of looking at the game. And I think that although he never was able to win an NBA title, I think just from a sheer standpoint of him being able to come up with new things and be able to shape the game and use his personnel in different ways than anybody had ever thought of. I think Don Nelson probably deserves inclusion on that discussion. So I'm not sure which direction I would go. And maybe there's somebody that we forgot that is not coming to mind off the top of my head.
When I was looking this up, there were some other names. John Kundla, who I don't necessarily – I mean, I don't know really. I just be honest with you, that was the first time I saw his name. And that may be sad, but I'm not a historian of the game, and I don't really remember reading about him before. So,
was he with the Minneapolis Lakers?
Yeah, he won the five straight.
Okay, I thought the Minneapolis Lakers with George Mikan, right?
Yeah,
okay,
so that's what I thought. You've got a good memory. You got a good
I couldn't claim to know much more.
Couldn't
claim to know much more
and
about
then
him.
The other guy, the other two that were on there were Chuck Daly and Jerry Sloan.
So Chuck Daly coached the Dream Team, won two titles with the Pistons, was tremendously successful throughout his career. Jerry Sloan, same thing with the Bulls, or same thing with the Jazz.
21 years with the Jazz.
Long career, one team, very, very successful, never quite got over the hump, but good coach, good coach. If I was voting for the three guys that we were mentioning, I mean, part of me's partial to Lenny Wilkins because he was a hometown guy, but I really think that Don Nelson was probably the more innovative of the two. And, you know, gun to my head, I think I'd probably pick Don Nelson over slightly over Lenny Wilkins.
I'm going to go Lenny just because I like his fashion sense and he was a coach of the Cavs. All right, and that's nice. What I'm going with.
Well, or we could just narrow it down and say it's the Mount Rushmore of coaches and limit ourselves to four. Yeah. And I think the four at the top are clear. I think there's a clear demarcation between those top four.
Do you think there's any current coaches that could jump in? Like, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, if you look at purely from a reputation standpoint and the fact that Brad Stevens started so young, he has potentially a long, long time to continue to coach in the NBA. And insiders and people who know a lot about coaching in the NBA seem to think that he does a great job. So is there a possibility? I mean, he's a long way from ever coming close to that at this point. But
Steve Kerr's name in that list. I mean, I know he's got a talent situation.
And Kerr's got some, you know, I don't know that you would take. He's got a very short shelf life at this point.
Got true.
The other guys that we've talked about have coached for a long time. And I think in order to be able to put yourself into the top five coaches of all time, I think you have to do it either with different players or using a different system or some way distinguish yourself. And that's not to diminish what Kerr has done, because I think that he was the key to be able to unlock what that team could become.
Yeah.
But I think you have to judge him in other scenarios and see how he would work and function in other...
Speaking about his shelf life, I mean, obviously his health's always been a concern, so how many more years is he really going to be a coach? So
correct.
I can see that.
Correct. So I think we got the first four right. If anybody out there has somebody that we didn't have in consideration, go ahead and tweet at us at HoopHeadsPod and let us know what we messed up there. We are looking forward to the NBA season. We're going to try to, from this point forward, I think, if we can, put out an NBA episode every Wednesday morning so that you'll have that in your feed. And we will continue to have our two interview episodes per week on Monday and Friday. So we appreciate you listening out there, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.